The message is going to be in two parts today. Firstly, the message is not going to be the one that was advertised in the email. So if you're expecting something on gifts, that's not going to happen. Richard, in a very good message last Sunday, amongst other things, covered the issue of gifts. And I just wanted today repeat and affirm his encouragement that each of us should recognise what our gifts are. And gifts aren't necessarily talents. You might be good at something, but the special gift that God has given you may not be that talent. It might be. God doesn't work illogically. But sometimes our gifts come out of our weakness as well as out of our strength. So I'd encourage you to do that. And when you've done it, Richard encouraged Stephen, write it down and take it to one of the leaders in the church. Because it might well be that the leader will say, well, look, I can see some other gifts, or how can we help you develop this gift, or do you need to workshop this gift a little bit more, something like that. Because for us to be a vibrant body of Christ, God has given us gifts, and we need to be able to use them well, not have them in the cupboard. And you have gifts whether you are 2 years old or 102 years old. Raina's going to come and read from the Gospel of Matthew. So it's Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 to 12. And it's the story about the visit of the Magi to Jesus and to Mary and Joseph.
So this is Matthew chapter 2, verse 1 to 12. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east, and we have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and the teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least amongst the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will be shepherd of my people Israel." When Herod had called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared, he sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After that, they had heard the king. They went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. When they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and myrrh, then they opened. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route.
Thanks, Raina. And just in case you thought Lucy was looking at Facebook rather than following the reading, she was actually following it on her phone. So feel free when you're at worship here to follow the message on your phone or on your iPad or whatever device it is, or from one of those Bibles in the trolley over there. I've realised I haven't introduced myself. Most of you will know me, but for those who don't, my name is Paul Mulroney. I'm one of the leaders in the church here. Our minister, Peter Godwin's away on holiday at present, so that's why I'm here rather than with Peter. The Bible verse gives me an excuse to tell a joke. The question arises, and I might say at first, there's no basis for thinking that there were three wise men or three magi apart from the fact that there were three gifts, but go with me on this. What would have happened if there were three wise women instead of three wise men? Okay? Firstly, they would have asked for directions to the stable locally rather than asking Herod. Secondly, they would have arrived on time and helped deliver the baby. Thirdly, they probably each would have brought something useful like a casserole or something like that. And fourthly, there would have been peace on earth. Okay. Quick unpacking. The Magi were pagans. They were not Jews. They didn't know much. They were very wise and very studious, and they knew something about the God that we worship. But they came from quite a different religious background. But they were the true seekers. They were the people who had followed the star, perhaps a planetary conjunction, whatever, we won't go into the astronomy. But they sought the person born to be king of the Jews. The people who should have been, who you would expect to have been, the ruler of the country, the religious leaders, were complacent. They were only interested in their own position and their own power and their own way of doing things. So the good news of Jesus is for everyone. That's one of the messages from this passage. The second thing is the way isn't always clear. They did take a wrong turn. They went, even though they had obviously come following this star, no sat-nav, no Google Maps, no nothing, they still didn't quite know where to go, and they went to some of the expected places. And that's what we'll do sometimes in our life. It's worth noting that by the time they got there, they wouldn't have gone to a stable. They would have gone to the home of Joseph and Mary. But it still would have been a pretty humble place. So these guys who had the resources to travel a long distance and bring very precious gifts, so they were pretty well resourced, still came to Jesus, and we are told that they worshipped him. They came to a humble dwelling, a baby or an infant, and they worshipped him. So they must have been really called by God and enabled by God to do that. So we will at times be in humble and bizarre situations, but we will still have the opportunity to worship. And they continued to be open to God. They followed God's leading there, they followed God's leading whilst they were there, and they followed God's leading when they left on their further journey. They didn't go back to Herod and spill the beans. Obviously, Herod worked out that there was something happening and ordered something pretty awful. But they continued to follow God as they returned to their country. It's the first part of today's message. The second part is a living message. I think so often when we hear people's stories, God speaks to us. And I was talking with Nurit recently, and she's going to come up and be ready to share a little bit of her story, because I think God can speak to us through Nurit this morning. So come on up. You can't hide behind me. You've got to... We haven't practiced sitting on the chair, have we? So everyone, this is Nurit. She's been worshipping with us for a little while now. And we did rehearse some questions, so she's had some forewarning of where this is coming from. So do you know what your date of birth is?
No, not really.
So why is that?
So in Ethiopia, they don't keep records. So I was born in Ethiopia. And they don't keep records of your date of birth, so the government gave me a date of birth.
Okay. And tell us, you've got sort of two families, is that right?
Yeah.
So can you tell us more about that?
So I was adopted out of Ethiopia by Americans. So I got that family, which is what I really call family usually. And that's my adopted mom, my adopted dad, my adopted brother, an adopted sister, and also grandparents and all that. And then I also found, actually weirdly, we connected on Facebook, my adopted half-sister, oh no, my biological half-sister and biological half-brother. So I also have grandparents and aunts in Ethiopia I haven't met. Yeah.
I knew I had to put some Bible stuff in here somewhere for it to be a proper sermon. And I was researching online and looked up, and because I knew that God was concerned about widows and orphans, because Nurit was an orphan before she was adopted. And there were only two verses came up when I put in orphans. But then I did a bit more research, and as soon as I put in the word fatherless, a lot more Bible verses came up. And in Psalm 10, it says, "But you, O God, see the trouble of the afflicted. You consider their grief and take it in hand. The victims commit themselves to you. You are the helper of the fatherless." So some Americans helped you. And you've lived in a few places in your life.
You could say that, yeah. So I was born in Ethiopia, and then I was adopted to Alaska in America. And then after a few years, we moved to Adelaide in Australia. And then we moved back to the States and lived in Vermont. And then we moved to Washington on the other side of America.
That's Washington State, where Seattle is.
Oh, yeah, Seattle. Well, yep. An hour or two away, but pretty much. And then after that, we moved to Brisbane, back in Australia. And then I moved with John to Sydney, my husband.
So is there a particular time when you can say you became a Christian?
I think it was kind of developed, but I guess there was, so I went to church since I was a kid. My mom took us there, and then after a while, like after all the moves, my mom stopped going to a Christian church, and we started going to another church, and then me and my brother didn't really like that church, and so my brother actually found another Christian church when we were in like middle school, and so I followed him there, and then that's where I gave my life to God, yeah.
Okay. So when Nurit's talking about another church, just so you don't think she's too prejudiced, it was a Unitarian church, and they have a different understanding.
Yeah.
They don't believe that Jesus was God. They believe that he was just a human,
and
a human
son
being.
God.
Sorry?
The earth, Gaia, the earth god,
yeah.
Kind of stuff. I was a bit confused.
It is a bit confusing. So you and your brother are a bit like the Magi. You knew you needed to worship,
yeah.
And fortunately he did the research and you found a place.
Yeah, I think one of his mates at school was like, oh, I go to this kids' youth group, and then he started going and he was having a lot of fun, and I was like, I want to come. So I was the younger sister who just dragged along with him.
Right. Yeah. But you moved to Brisbane shortly after that.
Yeah, we moved every 2 or 3 years, so
yeah
pretty shortly.
And when you landed in Brisbane, you didn't straight away connect up with the church?
No, I tried, but at my school there was a lot of Asians, and then I asked them, what church do you go to? And they're like, sorry, my church only speaks in Chinese, or my church only speaks Korean. And I was like, okay. And all my other friends weren't Christian, so that was a bit challenging.
Right. And just, you came to Brisbane halfway through year 10, so
yeah.
You'd come from the American education system to do a year and a half of high school.
Yeah.
But you still graduated from high school well enough to get yourself into university.
Yeah, thank God.
So you wouldn't brag about yourself, but you're obviously clever.
No.
Okay, so you go to university.
Yeah.
And you're studying arts degrees?
I was doing Chinese, Korean and history at the time.
Okay. All of them being your first languages, Chinese, Korean and history. Okay, but something special happened in the first week of university.
Yeah, I was at O Week, and I had signed up to about like 20 of the different membership clubs, and one of the ones I signed up was this cultural club, and then I paid like the $5 to sign up, And I walked away without the little card that says, you're officially a member. But this girl decided to chase me down for like 10 minutes at least to give me the card.
So she literally went the extra mile to,
pretty much.
To chase you.
Yeah.
And so you became a friend with her?
Yeah, and they had church groups at my school.
Yeah. So what then happened after that?
Well, I started going to them, and I was, like, reconnected, and I was even more, I think, passionate, actually, yeah. And I started going to the church there.
Okay. Yeah. And, but that woman chasing you, that had an impact.
Yeah, I was really touched because I found, without saying being a little mean, but when I came to Australia, the people were not that friendly to me. So to have, like, when I say hello, they don't say hi back. They just look at you like you're weird. So I was like, okay. So to have someone do something beyond normal kindness was really touching me. Yeah.
Okay. So. And at that church, you met somebody.
Yeah.
So firstly, you were going through some language stuff with him, is that right?
Yeah, so...
And after a while, that stopped because it was a bit boring or maybe some other reason. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Roughly.
But you then prayed something.
Yeah, so I felt bad because every time I went to sit with my friend, she had all of her friends and her boyfriend and all of her people, and they mainly spoke Chinese, which was also very difficult. So I wanted someone to sit with at church, yeah. So I prayed.
And and God answered your prayer every time you got off the bus.
Yeah, we went on for a few weeks. It was very strange, but I now realize it was God. But yeah, literally, after I get off the bus and was walking around the corner, he'd be getting off his motorbike, so. So yeah, and it happened for at least 3 weeks, I counted, so yeah.
So what's special about this guy, John? He's a pretty quiet guy, at least around here. So what's so special about him?
A lot. yeah, I think he's pretty good.
Well, I'll ask the leading question. You told me that when you guys first started talking to each other,
yeah. You
had so much to talk about.
Yeah, we did. I just felt like it was nice to have someone, we could have interesting conversations, and I felt like I could really be myself and really could try to at least understand who I was. And yeah, I think we just had so much fun together doing random, playing basketball, or even the boring thing like studying at the library was fun. So, yeah.
Okay, we might come back to John a little bit later. In Vermont, so that's northeastern USA.
Yeah, above New York, yeah.
You stood out.
Oh, yeah.
Why did you stand out?
Well, everywhere mainly my family stood out, but that one was very particular because there was only 9 people in my grade, and they were all Caucasian, you could say. And it was all rural town, everyone knew everyone, yeah.
And that's not an unusual experience for you, standing out as
being
different?
No, standing out is fine. I'm used to that. But I think it was very harder when it was only like 9 people. That was just more intimidating. And then, yeah, I guess you could say.
But you've had some other experiences. So when you were in Brisbane, you met up with some African people there.
Yeah.
And there was some not-so-happy experiences.
Yeah, you could say that.
Because you think that the police were picking on...
Not just police. People tend to have their judgments about me, even though they don't know me, or just because of my skin tone, really. Yeah. So we got asked. So, for example, we'd be sitting in the CBD. So imagine just sitting outside in the mall and chit-chatting, having a bubble tea, and then... And people would come, the police would come and say, what are you doing here? And we would be like, we're just hanging out, and they want to see our school IDs or something. So, yeah.
Okay. And fast forwarding a bit, when you moved to Sydney, you were applying for a job, and you got some advice about the job application. Well, how to appear when you went for a job interview.
Oh, yeah, that one. That was funny. Yeah, so I applied for a job at the law firm, actually, and then they told me I couldn't wear my hair like this, so I actually used some, like, things to slick it back, like, and I looked like a man. She was like, don't wear a skirt, make your hair, like, as flat as possible.
This is the recruiter who was coaching you for the job.
So I went in, I wore a suit and had no hair. Well, it was in the back, but it looked like I had no hair.
She does look like a skinny bloke. I've seen the photo.
Yeah. It's really funny.
But you got that job.
Yeah, and when they found out later, years later, obviously, 3 years later, they were like, I don't know who told you that, but please wear your hair. So now I wear my fro to work. So, yeah.
Okay, going back a bit, why did you move from Brisbane to Sydney? So you and John were married?
Yeah.
Living in Brisbane?
Yeah. So one weekend, I think, John asked me, you know, I think it would be beneficial if we moved to Sydney. There's more opportunities for both of us. And then I think I was considering it heavily, although my parents were like, ugh. And then I went to church that weekend, and these pastors were actually visiting our church. And they're like, we're planting a church in Sydney. And I was like, whoa, how did I know? So, we decided to move, and then we ended up going to Hurstville to help them with their church.
So you're involved in a church, pretty heavily involved in a church at Hurstville.
Yeah, very, very involved.
And then there were some changes there.
Yeah.
And the church grew.
Yeah, so there was a lot of ups and downs, I guess, with any church. We faced a lot of challenges, but we got through most of them, and now they're thriving, I think.
And I think you just basically decided your work there was done. Is that a...
Kind of. We just felt it was... We were waiting for a time because we had been there already for 3 years, and we were just waiting for God to say when. And I think it just... The chime of the hours and everything, we just felt it was time. And the church had plenty of people. Yeah, really.
And it was a church that was fairly heavily populated with people of Chinese and Malaysian background. Is that right?
Chinese.
Okay. Chinese. And I forgot to slip in the Bible a bit earlier. So in Galatians, Paul says, there is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ. So that's sort of been part of your experience, hasn't it?
Yeah, I've met people all over the nation who believe God, and I think it's possible we can all come together and pray together. Doesn't matter what language you speak.
Now, you've had a couple of big challenges since you've been in Sydney.
Yeah. Well,
more than a couple, but two. So one, there was a good Christian friend.
Yeah.
And something happened.
Yeah, just things, few mean words were said, I guess. But overall, I think it's like God will test you, and he doesn't usually use people you don't know, so it's always people that mean something to you. So I think that was hard. But I was reminded by my previous tests of forgiveness. So, yeah, I think constantly, and I think forgiveness is also one of the biggest things in the Bible. So I was tested again.
And you're also supported by somebody, the wonderful John.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, I was. I was like, ooh.
So he came in and helped you.
Yeah, that was really nice, yes.
Okay. And there was another situation, so you've moved to Sydney.
Yeah.
You're studying.
Yep.
At Sydney. And you're working two jobs to keep things happening together. John's got a job in IT at this stage.
No. He was, I think, studying at that time.
He was still studying, okay.
Yeah.
So a couple of poor university students, you're working two jobs, and one of them's exploiting you. So you're there... Yeah. Working in a cafe?
Yeah, I was working in a cafe for a while. 6 months, I think, roughly. And I just couldn't do it. I think they needed more people, and I was very demanded, and I just physically couldn't do it, and emotionally couldn't keep up with the things they said at the same time. So.
But you couldn't afford to lose your job.
No, I couldn't quit.
But you got to a point where something happened.
It was just to a point that it couldn't keep going anymore. So yeah, that was, but at that time, it had to be that time. So I was Christian, obviously, during this time, and I prayed, and I couldn't understand why. So I was very frustrated, as anyone would be when they feel their prayers are getting ignored. But it wasn't really ignored, because God had something greater. So the time I quit, I applied for a job which had just opened, and I got a job at the firm. So, and now I'm studying same subject. So
that was the job where you had to hide your lovely hair and look like a bloke.
Yeah.
And you got hired pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And after a while, because they do insurance and legal work.
Yeah.
And you got so excited by insurance law that you decided you wanted to be a lawyer.
Exactly. But I wouldn't have done that.
I don't understand that insurance law, really. So now you're studying law.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And you brought along a classmate today as well.
Yeah. I met her actually at the end of this year. Sadly, it was too late. But yeah, at least we have many years to go together.
Good.
That's the benefit of law degree.
And so you left the church because it was sort of a bit of mission accomplished sort of thing. So how did you get to come to this place?
Well, so after we finished, we decided it was time to kind of end there. We were looking and we went to a few churches around the eastern suburbs because we lived at that time around, I think, Edgecliff area or, you know, Double Bay. I forgot where exactly. I moved a lot still. And so, yeah, we tried a few churches, and actually I had gone through a lot of stress from uni at that time too. So I came to this church, and lovely Flora actually talked to me for about, I think, 20 minutes.
So
it was a long time.
She didn't just say, hello, how are you?
Yeah, which was really
nice.
Nice
to meet you, flick.
Yeah, it wasn't like, hi, bye. Nice, welcome to our church, bye. So it was really good. And I really needed that at that time, so, yeah.
So I think you explained to me that you thought God was working through Flora.
Yeah.
And that love that she showed.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So maybe Flora's an example to us all.
Yeah, very good job.
So why have you stayed, apart from Flora?
Well, I just felt God's connection in the people, and also, I felt like when you're looking for a church, some people go there with their checklist, like, you know, gotta have the good preaching, gotta have the good singing, gotta have the lights or whatever, you know. And originally I was going to approach a church like that, but I realized that's the wrong way to approach looking for a church. And so when I came here and I felt God's connection with the people and the church, and I felt like, you know, it was time for us to find a church we have a purpose in. So yeah, I feel like there's a purpose here with these people. Yeah, with you all, not these people. It's you guys, so, yeah.
And this was a journey that you and John shared together. You didn't just make the
decision
and say, come on, John.
It was
John.
A shared decision. And every week we came, we found something unique about this church. So one of the things, John's favorite sport is basketball. And we really did not know there's a basketball court just upstairs. So that was crazy. I was like, wow. So, yeah, just a lot of little things like that that we were just overwhelmed with. I think it was God's really placing us here, not us. But, yeah.
In Isaiah, we hear these words, I will lead the blind by ways they have not known. Along unfamiliar paths I will guide them. I will turn the darkness into light before them and make the rough places smooth. These are the things that I will do. I will not forsake them. Does that ring bells? I don't mean the particular verse, but is that your experience?
Yeah, I think I feel like everyone in this place has probably faced challenges, probably different than mine, but I feel like God is there to smooth out our darkness. And when we, like today actually, the Bible verse was the light unto the lamp and the light to my path. I felt that one is very important because we can't go around, you know, without His guidance. And through the dark parts and through the struggles we face, we need God to know how to handle things, how to handle challenges, how to handle people's ignorance on how to deal with other cultures. We need to know how to deal with everything. So I felt, yeah, that was, I guess, the verse that really stuck to me this morning. So
I've got more questions that I could ask Nurit, but I'm going to stop it there. My guess is that some of you don't all descend on the poor girl at once after worship, but you're open to chatting with people about your life and the impact of God in your life, as I understand.
Oh, yes.
So I want to thank Nurit for sharing her journey with us today, and I hope that it's not just, oh, well, that's really interesting, but I hope that for each of us it's an encouragement as to how God acts in our life and will continue to act in our life. Thanks, Nurit.
Thank you, guys.
So now the music team's going to come back and lead us in the song Breathe on Us, and then we'll move into communion.